ತುಪ್ಪಿ ಚನ್ನ ಬಾಲವ ಗಿರಿರಾಜ ಬಾರಿ
reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, the Lord's pastimes out of Vrindavan.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
We're reading text 8 and text 9. We can do 8 repetitively. Asamahurta ekasmin.
Asamahurta ekasmin.
Nanagareshu yochita.
Nanagareshu yochita.
Saviram jagre pani.
Saviram jagre pani.
Anurupakswamayaya.
Anurupakswamayaya.
Please chant. All those. Mahurte. At one time. Ekasmin.
Simultaneously.
Nana agrareshu.
In different
compartments.
Yoshitam.
Of the women. Savimham.
With perfect rituals.
Jagrihe. Accepted.
Panin.
Hands.
Anurupaha.
Exactly to match.
Swamayaya.
By his internal potency. Translation purport. All those princesses were lodged in different apartments, and the Lord simultaneously assumed different bodily expansions, exactly matching each and every princess. He accepted their hands in perfect rituals by his internal potency. Purport. In the Brahma Samhita 533, the Lord is described as follows in regards to his innumerable plenary expansions. Advaita Machutam Anadam Ananta Rupam Ajam Param Purusham Navayogam Cha Vedeshadulabham Adulabham Atmabhakto Govindam Adipusham Tamaham Ajami. The Lord, Govinda, whom I worship, is the original personality of Godhead. He is non-different from his innumerable plenary expansions, who are all infallible, original, and unlimited, and who have eternal forms. Although he is primeval, the oldest personality, he is always fresh and young. By his internal potency, the Lord can expand himself into various personalities of Swayam Prakash, and again into Prabhava and Vaibhava forms. And all of them are non-different from one another. The forms into which the Lord expanded to marry the princesses in different apartments were all slightly different, just to match each and every one of them. They are called Vaibhava Vilas, forms of the Lord, and are affected by his internal potency, Yoga Maya. Text 9, Tasvapatyanya Ajanayayad Atmatulyani Sarvataha Ekaikashyam Dasha Dasha Prakrite Vibhushaya. Translation, just to expand himself according to his transcendental features, the Lord begot in each and every one of them 10 offspring, which exactly, with exactly his own qualities. So we've been hearing for a couple of purports here about this killing of Bhomeshwara and Arkashura. And delivering these princesses were who were in distress. Indra actually went to the palace of Krishna and told him that there are these damsels in distress, go save them, and to recover their items. And he did that. He took, as we heard yesterday, took his wife and went there very quickly, didn't think twice about it. In a nice heroic mood, he went there, and he had to deal with all these inhibitions that were in front of him. The palace had anila gas and barbed wire and all kinds of things around it, but he managed to get through them all. And then he blew his conch shell, here I am, and the Mura demon got very angry. He woke up and said, what's going on? You've destroyed all the work I've done. And so he took out his trident, and they pursued in a battle. Of course, he lost. But his sons were very close by, and they came by, and they wanted retaliation. So they got on their chariots or whatever, and they fought with all different kinds of weapons. And they were defeated also. And then Banasura was left and thinking, well, I guess it's my turn. So he goes and gets his elephants. He had like 1,000 elephants. And these elephants, somehow or other, when they get raised on the seashore, they get more powerful. Don't ask me how. But anyway, they came and they were all intoxicated. And I don't know, I've watched a video before of a really mad elephant. And what havoc. I mean, they're like the most frightening thing I've ever seen, what they can do. They can just destroy everything in sight. And so this was quite a battle, and they use all different kinds of weapons and tricks to try to defeat each other. And then Krishna got tired of it and said, okay, and he sliced off his head. And that was the end of Bhumasura. And then the mother, the earth, came and apologized and said, you know, the rascal son, here's your earrings back, here's your umbrella back. And she said some very nice prayers all about Krishna, how wonderful he is. And so now it's time for Krishna to enter the palace where the ladies are. And there are 16,100 princesses in distress. And it was explained that was because they were not married, but they were kidnapped and taken in custody by this very strong king. And so now they're considered in the Veda culture, if you've been touched or hung out with some other man, then you're not presentable to be married to anyone else. And so they were immediately anxious to see if they could win Krishna over and have him marry them. So they were, when they saw him, they were very enchanted with him. Just the presence of Krishna is, of course, we can't imagine what it must be like, although we can have darshan every day and be amazed how wonderful Krishna looks every day, and that it only gets better. And so he did offer. He offered to take them and to marry them all, as we hear here. And it wasn't that, you know, oh gosh, I've got 16,999 other wives, and it's just me, little old me, and how am I ever going to see Krishna and have, you know, what kind of relationship is this going to be? But no, he expands himself. It's described here. Krishna can just do anything. And he expands himself, and he actually satisfies them all. They're all very satisfied, and he has a big procession. Of course, the fathers are real pleased. My daughter is taken care of, you know, phew. Actually, Prabhupada said that the position of a father is always that anxiety of having, I have to get my daughter married, you know, right after puberty or before puberty. I have to get her marriage. So this is always their anxiety. And so these kings, here they are, have all these princesses that are untouchable, and now Krishna has saved them. So, of course, they were very grateful for this act. And so Krishna arranges a big procession back to Dwarka, and they're all given a palace. And it's described that Krishna treated it was like an ordinary marriage. It wasn't anything different. They would smile and they would embrace and they would joke, and it was just wonderful. And of course, the princesses, they all wanted to just simply serve Krishna. So they actually did a lot of personal service to him. And it worked out really, really well. So Krishna is a hero in this way. I actually worked with teenage girls of marriageable age for about 26 years. And very strange phenomenon when you get to be about 13, I think it's a little later for men, I think it's like 17, that all of a sudden you think that I don't need to be in the custody of anybody. I should have full reign, and I should just go do what I want to do. Every single one of them, no matter, all over the world, somehow 13, those hormones kick in, and you just think that I don't need parents, I don't need this, I don't need that, I just want to be free. And this is very dangerous, because at that time the senses are extremely strong and very difficult to control. And now in Kali Yuga, the temptations are like just right there at your fingertips, what less the all the different association that Kali Yuga brings, which is so degrading and overwhelming. And with no protection, you know, it's double trouble. It's double trouble for everybody in the whole society. The first year I went to India was 1975, and I was amazed to see that there was no teenage girls on the streets. I never saw teenage girls, except for across the street from where we were just opening the Krishna Balaram temple. There used to be a school way back there, and you'd see some young ladies in Punjabi, nice outfits, you know, all uniforms. And you would see them very quickly. They'd go to school, and then you'd see them come back out. But you never saw them hanging out on the streets, unless you went to like a home program, and then they were there with their parents. And they would help in the kitchen. And then in the 80s, early 80s, we took the ashram girls. Beautiful girls, you know, really, I mean, devoted kids are so beautiful. And we would go to a lot of different programs, and the young ladies, the Indian girls, were with their parents, and we would come in, and they would not want us to speak, have our girls speak to their girls. Now, don't preach to us, my girls. You know, don't. They were considering the Western consciousness was contaminated, even though we were devotees. But that's how we show ourselves. Anyway, so later on, 10 years later, in the 90s, we bring our girls. We bring them every year. And then this time, you see teenage girls on the streets. Hindu girl, you know, Indian girls, tight jeans, cell phones in their hands, hanging out, looking for some action. And we'd go to the home programs. Can you please, please preach to our girls? Can you please, you know, they're telling me to flake off, they're wanting to do this, they want to do that, and your girls, you know, they've actually accepted this, you know, can you please preach to them? So it was, you could just see in those few years what can happen, you know, what less now, you know, it's unbelievable. So times are changing, and values are definitely changing, and it's scary. If you don't believe me, go on Harinam during the school year, especially in the warm weather, and go there and try to concentrate on the holy name, and you have these people walking by with, like, you know, did they forget to get dressed or what? You know? I mean, it just gets worse and worse and thinner and finer and littler. And it's such a distraction. I mean, really a distraction. Poor men, you know. Anyway, it's a real test. No sense of purity. No pride in purity whatsoever. Simply a meat market. That's all. They're just trying to lure. It's just bait, luring. It's hard to swallow. You know, to see the degradation that's going on. It's no purities left in there. But we have, in the Vedic culture, we have these four rules of regulations that we follow. We call them the four principles of freedom, because it really is. It helps you, build that foundation for spiritual life. And today, when your senses aren't controlled, you're not being protected, and you got free rein, then you're not going to really be happy, because you're not going to be peaceful. You're always going to be worried you're going to get in trouble. Girls today have to worry about the pill, abortion. They have to worry about, do I have two parents that are original parents? Probably not. Stress, anxiety, and then addiction to the drugs that you have to take to get off the addiction, off the stress. It's just society is a mess because there is no culture. Zero culture in America. But we spread that zero culture everywhere else and watch them all go down. And it's really shameful. But anyway, Krishna is so kind that he's come here, come to these ladies and rescued them despite whatever. And in loving way, he's taking care of them and protecting them. And you can see that actually Krishna is also so kind to us, because those ladies, they were kidnapped, but we all chose to leave his custody. We were in his custody and we said, I want my freedom. I want to enjoy. So what does he do? He says, okay, you go down there in the material world, and guess what? But you're still going to be in custody of Maya. And she's tough. She's a tough cookie. So good luck. And what does the material energy do to us? It pollutes us. It abuses us. And we're always left in illusion. And if we admit it, we're pretty miserable here in the material world. But Krishna's so kind, he's willing to take us back, even though we are contaminated. He says, here's my representative, just follow his instructions, he'll embrace you, and he'll give you this chance to go back home, to come back to me. So Krishna is really putting out everything for these ladies. He went there and did that whole thing, battled and everything, had to kill people and go in there and break in and rescue them. And he does that for us also. He really, stretches. And so therefore we should see that we should do our very best this lifetime. We should stretch a little. No, we should stretch a lot. And do our best to satisfy him and to accept his instructions and his help. He's putting out that hand and wanting us to grab hold of it. So surrendering, that's the name of the game. And surrender sometimes is very painful, because you have to give up things that you don't want, you have to do things you don't want. But it's good. No pain, no gain. And it's much less pain than Maya's grip. She can put a really tight squeeze on you, such that you just don't even want to be here. You want to get out of here. But we have plenty of excuses, right? So many excuses, even as devotees. Prabhu, it's not my service, or got a busy schedule, or not time. I don't know how. So many excuses. So we've had excuses for how many lifetimes now? Thousands, millions of lifetimes we've had excuses. And we should be embarrassed that we're going to put it off again, that we aren't going to give full surrender. So the women here, they immediately, yes, we surrender. So we should also think about doing that, because we need to recognize that we're imprisoned just like they were imprisoned. And we need to see that following the Vedic standard is how we can get released. Following Krishna's instructions that he's given, that Prabhupada has been presenting to us, how to live impurity. Of course, you know, Prabhupada had to adjust some standards, but in general, we simply should, you know, somehow or other stick to that standard. Here we can see that Krishna's doing some of his magic where he's, he's expanded himself now to be with all these ladies at the same time so they're not in anxiety. And he's also, he changes his personality so that it's exactly what you want in a relationship. I mean, and can you imagine matchmaking things? You go online and you can find a match, you know. Can you imagine if you could go online and find, I have the perfect person for you, whatever you want, he'll be just like that, or she'll be just exactly like that. Anyway, Krishna had this service down to the, you know, key thing. He could know exactly what that lady desired, what kind of furniture they wanted in the palace. When they arrived, the palaces were already there, 16,100 palaces, all decorated just the way the ladies liked. Everything was there, just customized. Pretty amazing. No matchmaking service like that. And the relationships, they didn't get old, stale. In the material world, they don't get stale, they get rotten, and they fade away, and you start looking for another one relationship, and it's not fulfilling. But Krishna's vibrant, and the variety and the freshness of it is there eternally. So Krishna has so much magic he can do. This ability to have all these different expansion forms is just amazing. What other person would you want to have as a husband or as a lover or as a friend or a son? What other person would you want? So we have that opportunity to begin a little bit of, you know, trying to revive that relationship, learning the art of surrender from Prabhupada and from our God sisters and God brothers. I was on a plane not too long ago, and I noticed that some people went by me. I was kind of near the back, and these two ladies with the, what do you call them, things over there, whatever, and they both had like a couple babies underneath the arms, and then there was just one man, a Muslim man, taking them back and was, you know, trying to put them here and trying to put everything there and everything like that. And I was thinking, this man has two wives. And I realized that, you know, it really happened, you know, that people could take more, you know, I guess it's allowed that they're allowed to have more than one wife. And I was thinking, expensive, you know, all these seats, he had to get all these seats and all the arrangement and all the baggage and all the thing and all the dresses and all the, I thought, no way we could do this here in America. I mean, even Prabhupada was amazed that it was so difficult for one person to have, you know, one wife and one kid, you know, to raise the money and to raise, you know, he was just amazed that, What's the difficulty, you know? A wife, you just get a job and take care of them. But anyway, I was pretty impressed, but I was trying to put myself in the shoes of one of these ladies, you know, to think that, you know, that's my co-wife right there, and it was just really hard. I mean, try to think of it, ladies. I mean, very difficult, you know? I don't know how many of us would make it. I don't think so. You know, or the other one wouldn't make it because, anyway. So the jealousy, it must have been there, but there wasn't any of that, you know, none of that, because Krishna is so expert. And to maintain them, you know, 16,108 palaces, you know, done in a few minutes, and decked out to the hilt, you know, with everything. So the Vedic culture provides shelters for everyone in society. The brahmacharis, they have their shelter. They can be very satisfied just studying the Vedic scriptures, and they can get their strength to maintain their vows through renunciation, and they get, you know, quick advancement because of this concentration, this type of life. And it's a shelter, you know. And then the grihasthas, they also have a shelter. They have, you know, regular regulated gratification of their senses. Gradually they become detached and they learn how to put Krishna in the center of their lives. Vanaprastha, they get a taste of real freedom from, you know, material responsibility, and then they get to become, you know, a little bit more engrossed and concentrate on their spiritual life, and becomes their focus. And then, of course, sannyas, they're protected by a real simple life, and the preaching absorbs them totally, so they can perfect and go back to Godhead. So there's a shelter for everyone, because all living beings should be following some instructions. This is their shelter. They should also learn how to live the philosophy, to live the instructions. That's the most important thing, not just armchair philosophy, but actually getting the guidelines of how to actually practice this type of spiritual life in whatever stage you're at. And so our movement, the Krishna Consciousness Movement, should respect the outline of the Vedic culture and try to keep it pure. Srila Prabhupada, you know, he did have to change some things, but he never compromised the purity. And of course, Lord Chaitanya, his whole mood was to embrace everybody, not to push anybody away. Because the holy name is there for everybody. And we can see, just like in a week or so, 1,000 people or more are going to come here for the Holy Name Festival, as they do every year. It's amazing to see how many people come. All different kinds of people come. I had a guest a few weeks ago, and I said, well, how'd you hear about it? She goes, well, I went to the Holy Name Festival. She didn't know much about Krishna consciousness. She says, I just saw it online, I went. I was really impressed. I think you also went to the Holy Name Festival, you know? I'm Bhakti Kevin here. Because everyone can come. Everyone can experience this upliftment of spiritual life, which the Vedic culture is so expert at doing. And so this chanting is something that everyone can participate in. Everyone can get that injection. So we're praying that the third generation, who Prabhupada said should be in the pure, was kind of hopeless for us, the first generation. Second generation, hit or miss. Third generation, pure, hopefully. And that they can actually solidify these standards that Prabhupada has given us. And of course we are always praying that the men become very responsible and become trained in this philosophy, become strong in leadership, and to also to learn how to practice it in your daily life, especially when you become grihasthas, how to maintain that purity. So this is a society where we have to work on it together to please the acharyas and to please Srila Prabhupada, not to minimize the standard. Especially, I know that there's one that just really irks me, and that is which has to do with this this pastime, is that when men and women live together before they're married, now in our movements, even more or less, the standard, we accept it, what can we do about it? But that's not the Vedic standard, as we see in this whole thing, that the women were considered impure after that. So now, what, have we lost something? I think we have lost something. And I think that the next generation needs to work on it. And it's not that it's not impossible to encourage and to reestablish this very important principle, as we see here. I went to Kenya a couple of years ago, and I was amazed to see that they had made a rule that we think is impossible. They made a rule in their home country: no plastic. You get in big trouble if you're caught with it. We were warned that before going. Don't bring plastic bags. Leave it at home in your America. and the whole country respects that. You don't see plastic bags anywhere in Kenya. They did it. They just did it. And so some things we just have to do. And that these are important rules that we have to do. So we can take it as a challenge. And Papa said always try to increase, don't decrease, but at least maintain. So Prabhupada was very displeased in the he embraced everybody, and he saw men and women living together and not married and everything, but he insisted. At a point, he said, you got to get married. You can't be doing this. So this should be the standard that we somehow or other get back together. And it's not like, we have so many, we can get married, and there's no problem. You can have as many children as you want. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was celibate his whole life. But he said, I would have sex life 100 times if I thought I could deliver my children, if I thought I was strong enough to, liberate them. So we should also be very cautious that we are in that same mood that children are for raising in Krishna consciousness and for helping spread this movement. Which is Prabhupada's desire. And so these are some things I see that might be worth discussing. If anybody would like to speak a little bit, something about that, or have comments, questions?
Hi, Krishna. You mentioned that Krishna is co-wives, there was no jealousy or like that.
I don't know.
Huh?
I don't know.
No, actually, the whole pastime, Krishna went to, after killing Narakasura, he went to get the Parijata tree for Satyabhama.
Yeah, and then there was jealousy for
Can you explain the difference of
No, I can't explain. That's the nature of women. But it's one of Krishna's pastimes to have all this stuff happen. So, anyway. No, I can't explain.
Just another comment is that I read someplace Srila Prabhupada said that just like, because in Vedic culture, I think generally the marriages are arranged.
Yeah.
Srila Prabhupada compared that with don't we accept whatever name that we've been given at the time of birth? So why you can't accept the spouse like that? He said.
Well, that's something else the third generation can work on. Good luck. We tried it, and it was a complete bloop.
I got cynical
you
question.
You got an answer?
I got a question.
Oh, okay.
I'm a little cynical about some of the stuff, but where does Prabhupada say we can't use plastic bags?
I didn't say you could.
Why do we have to emulate the Canadians?
Anyway, purity is a force. If we can, if we can respect nature and not use it, that'd be very nice.
Yes.
Technology is not always the best thing. There's always some bad product out of it.
Then I had another curious question. You know, in Vedic culture, they had this thing called Gandharva marriages. You ever heard about them?
Which one is that?
In Vedic culture.
Is that the kidnapping one, or which one?
I think it's they sort of just kind of get together.
Oh, really? Yeah, there's all kinds of things going on.
You know, this is Vedic culture. I mean, I think all three modes were there in Vedic culture as well.
Yeah, the rakshasa, the kidnapping, different things for different ashrams, different different people.
Yeah, I think sometimes when we talk about Vedic culture, we're kind of focusing on Brahminical culture within Vedic culture. I mean, it's gone, we're aiming for a Brahminical institution.
Right.
But it seems like Vedic culture is handing a heck of a lot more than just the Brahmins.
Well, perhaps. I don't think you're going to get away with kidnapping here in America, so you might as well rule that out.
Well, I mean, if you can't use plastic bags, I mean, you probably can't kidnap women either, so
right.
It's probably a good thing.
Thank you. Thank you. That was a really interesting analysis that you made about how the degradation progressed over just a matter of decades. And you mentioned like it was originated from America, I think you said that. And just was wondering, like, I wonder if it is an American phenomenon or not, because even as recent as like the 40s and the 50s, like there were these sort of more cultured ideas even in this country. And then I guess like the whole hippie revolution happened here in America. And so, you know, there was like degradation that came from that. And so perhaps, you know, that's the degradation that you mean when you say like it comes from America. And other countries were like not as degraded during those times. But now I feel like it's more like pervasive and worldwide. I mean, you know, just like this social media and all these images and media and entertainment, it's more like pervasive.
Yeah, it's a shame.
But even in America, like before like the 60s, it was very...
Well, I'll give you an example. I was at my sister's a couple of weeks ago and we were discussing something and it came up about when she brought her husband to be to meet the parents at the house, that they were used to, I guess, living together, but my mother would not allow them to stay in the same room. And she was laughing about it, how they snuck out anywhere, whatever. But anyway, you know, my mother would not tolerate. And that wasn't that long ago. That was, you know, the 60s, something like that. So there, yeah, the standard, we can't expect it to get any better, I don't think. Not out there in the Western world.
I think like the internet and the social media and all that is definitely...
It's a matter of value, of values.
Thank you, Mataji. Just a question from the translation. It said that Krishna had 10 children from each queen, but we hear that he had 10 sons and one daughter, so 11. How does it say 10?
Doesn't say anything about daughters. It just says the 10. I don't know.
I see.
All I know is that was a real benediction that at least he left some good progeny, like father, like son. So they were. That was mercy on us. We don't hear much about any of them, but I'm sure that they did some very wonderful things while they were on the planet. So we should be careful that we raise our children also very nice to help this planet. But we can only do our best. Okay, Jai Srila Prabhupada.